Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Pleased to welcome you to our All Sides Weekend Arts and Culture Edition. We'll be with you until 12 noon today, inviting your calls to talk about all things cultural in Central Ohio and environs with my guest, Cindy Gaylord, who is WOSU-TV's own producer of Art Scene. David Bringer is with The Ohio State University, and he's putting together a new area of study, a much-needed new area of study, and we'll be talking about this in music, media, and enterprise. And Tim Veach is the founder and artistic director of the Columbus Dance Theater, going into its
13th year next year.
In your own theater?
Yes, downtown.
When did you get that theater and how?
6 years ago, we left our space. We were in kind of a rickety old warehouse space behind a gas station in Upper Arlington area. And we decided to take a leap of faith and move downtown and find a space that we could use both as a studio and a performance space, and also provide space for the arts community in general to have affordable performance space, which was at that time kind of vacant in the community. And so we branched out and found it and renovated it, and there we are.
One point that your company makes on its website is that you are presenters. You present other endeavors as well in your theater, as well as being your own, presenting your own work, your own dance company. And you also employ, 12 or 13 dancers?
Yeah, we have, usually 8 full-time dancers and then apprentices beyond that. And then we have faculty for the school. The school is a separate enterprise of the organization.
So here we have, in the midst of what people are saying is an economic downturn for the arts, we have Tim Veach in his 13th season in his own theater doing multi-enterprise work in dance in Central Ohio. So that's why I wanted you to be on the show, because I want you to do in 5 minutes or less how to do it. People will be out there writing this down, and we will solve all the problems of the arts. Hold that thought. David Bringer, I have said about you off air, I'm going to say it on air now, is that you basically are reinventing the profession of arts administration and arts management. Many years ago, people like me got advanced degrees in arts management, and we basically didn't learn anything. We learned a lot of theory, but I never learned how to look at a balance sheet. I never learned how to write a press release. The social media we have today did not exist then. Tell me about this area of study that you are doing at The Ohio State University.
Well, what we want to do with this program is bring students together from different majors. They're coming together from business, from music, from the other arts, from strategic communications, and we're creating a cluster of classes that allow them to look at we do look at some theory, I have to tell you.
Well, it is a university, yes.
They would be critical of me if we didn't do that. But the truth of the matter is we look at theory from communication, like audience theory. We look at marketing theory. We look at a lot of economic theory. And the idea is we want to look at historical patterns where people have had institutions or entertainment enterprises that work. We want to try to analyze why they work. And then the most important part is we want to spend some time speculating on what would work today.
Is the goal for you, for your students, to get them to be able to help arts organizations or cultural organizations in a financially savvy way that might need help and might need to be brought kicking and screaming into the 21st century?
Well, yeah. I mean, essentially, that's it. I mean, there are two ways to go today. There are a lot of institutions. There are some that are vital and lively. Tim is an example of that. Others, not so much. And so our students, as they go out into the world in a few years, are going to have to either be entrepreneurs, they're going to have to build something from scratch or in collaboration, or they're going to have to come on board and help other people steer their own enterprises in a more not just profitable direction, but artistically and commercially viable direction. That's always the challenge.
I'm going to ask you in a bit how you are going about achieving that. Cindy Gaylord, Art Scene has been a big hit and a big part of WOSU-TV's programming for almost going on over 5 years right
now. 5 years, five and a half,
yeah. It's a collaboration with the Greater Columbus Arts Council.
It is, but also 22 arts organizations, of which Columbus Dance Theater is one.
You want to name them all right now? You don't have to do
that. Oh, gosh, that's a pop quiz, but I could if but it's the museum. It's Ballet Met. It's the Franklin Park Conservatory. Anything that is major in this city, we are covering, even all the way down to like the Asian Festival, which is actually coming up. So We've got a lot of very large organizations all the way down to very small
organizations. The reason I harp on that a bit is because it says a lot for this community that it can support a full-time team, that you have enough programming, that there's going on.
Oh, my God, yes.
To fill a half hour of television, a new half hour of television, what, 40 times a year?
Well, actually, about 9 times a year.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so
well,
it's brand new every month, but we also create radio and web content for that as well. So, yeah.
What's coming up? What are you working on? What's
Art Scene right
the
now,
buzz?
I got to go behind the scenes with Nanette Macy-Junes at the museum, our dear friend Nanette, and she donned a hard hat for us in front of our cameras and basically gave us a tour of how the museum is going right now. If you don't know, it's undergoing a huge renovation right now to the older building. Next year they will work on the newer wing that they will build from scratch. But the older building, which was not ADA accessible, did not have the right kind of electricity in it or you know, that needed more of an update on all of the facilities, is getting that update. Basically, I was in the master's room. I don't know if you can visualize the master's room without all the masters in it. It kind of scared me. But we talked about what the goals were for the museum, and you'll be able to see that on Art Scene. It will air May 5th, Wednesday at May 5th at 7:30 p.m. That is the first run. The other runs are on Saturdays and Sundays throughout the month.
We're also coming into festival seasons, are we not?
Oh, my gosh,
because the weather's getting nice and there's a lot going on with that.
We've got the Arts Fest coming up, which is the first weekend in June, and we will be there. And here's something fun that we are doing. WSU is working with GCAC. We're actually going to produce a video for their 50th anniversary. So we're going to go down to the archives. I've got them all in my edit room right now in slides and old VHS tapes and all sorts of stuff. So we're going to produce a video on that later on this year. So that's something to look forward to. And then the Asian Festival is coming up on – it's in May, whatever, Memorial Day? Is that right?
End of May.
End
that's
of
right.
May. Yes. Yeah. So that's coming up. So all sorts of festivals all the time.
So as the producer of that show, you do have your finger basically on the pulse of the arts community, as all three of you do, you have to basically expound on what you're doing. Here's a point that I always like to make when I have people like you in front of me, and that is that many, many years ago, I happened to know that if you lived in a big city and you wanted to know what was going on that night in the theater, in a museum, in a dance company, you could call and they would tell you, well, get on the bus and come on down here to the box office. But there was no vehicle to sell anything, to do a lot of advanced sale, except sometimes for subscriptions, where they would say, give us $1,000 and we'll send you 10 tickets to whatever, you know, because we want your money now to sit on it. Those days are long gone. What has replaced those days, David Bringer? And how is the social media platforms stepping up to that?
Well, I think the social media affect this in a couple of ways. First of all, it's completely changed the idea of what promotion is and how – I mean, word of mouth has always been an important part of presenting, obviously. But word of mouth is the meat and potatoes of the social media, but also because it's possible that you can go from a conversation and click through to a point of sale and buy a ticket. We have a much more immediate way to engage people with these operations. I mean, it's been quite a few years since I presented something, but that was primarily prior social media. And so the subscriptions were critical because, you need the money. And you need it as soon as you can get it. But also you want to get some kind of surety and commitment from people that once they bought the ticket, they're a little more likely to cross your threshold to do it. Today I know subscriptions still drive it, but the social media create this kind of immediacy and a chance to talk about the events before, after. I don't know. Is anybody doing anything where people are tweeting and talking during events now?
Oh,
my goodness. Yeah.
So there you go. During as well.
Tim Veach, is Facebook, social media, Twitter important to you in getting your word out?
We have a very active website, and we send out a lot of email blasts to our subscribers. We have hundreds and hundreds of subscribers to that website. That has actually become our dominant way of marketing. And I think what's interesting, I was talking to a marketing person who said, you can't just send stuff out asking people for money. You can't just send stuff out telling them about shows. You need to let them know what you're living every day in your arts organization. What are you doing? How are you going through your week? What is happening tomorrow with your rehearsals? What's happening? You know, you want to make it not just an ad. You want to make it a conversation with your patrons. And I think that that is more what people are interested in terms of where they're going to spend their free time, how they're going to take their precious free time
and invest that time more than their money. I think it's about time right now for people, and I think they want to know that they're part of your world as an organization.
Would what you as an artistic administrator and a presenter, what you're hearing from the public in that cyber conversation, if you will, would that ever influence your programming?
Absolutely. I mean, we just started doing online response forms from people as a way of being more dynamic in terms of response to our programming. So every time that someone comes to our show, they can go to the website and they can go to SurveyMonkey and they can click on stuff and let us know what their feedback on that performance was. We have receptions every time we have a show where we meet with patrons afterward. We talk. It's a dialogue about the art making. Now, if you're an artist, you want to make the art you want to make, but you also want to make it in response to your community and where you live. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that.
David, I'm curious with you. You, by definition, in the university, you're teaching a lot of younger people who are very savvy with the electronic media, who know more about Facebook and all that stuff than really maybe anybody in this room. No disrespect intended.
No, I'm taking it.
How are you teaching them?
I don't teach them how to use Facebook. Right. Because they're living on it already.
You might teach them why to use
anyway,
Facebook.
But what we try to do is talk about what works and why, like what are the operative, what we call the dynamic processes in place here. So in a lot of ways, Facebook isn't new, you know, as I said before, and everybody was nodding, you know, word of mouth has always been a big part of.
But that is Facebook, dude. Isn't it?
So yeah. This is just a new medium mm-hmm. for that. But what makes it new is the ability that time and space are not so relevant anymore for your social network. You can have friends all over the place. Facebook won't leave you alone, in fact. So it embeds in life in ways that it hasn't before. So the students understand all that viscerally because they're living it. But the question is how to use it, how to do what you're saying. How do we take advantage of these social media? How does an organization get into the conversation? Because that's where you have to be, because these students, part of them being savvy is that email blasts and things like that, it all tracks as ads and spam to them. They want a conversation.
That's interesting.
And they want to be able to talk back. So I think you're absolutely on the money, Tim. That's if you're not doing that. And in fact, one of the conversations we had about this, as I said, it seems to me that increasingly things that we previously thought were backstage, outside the performance, life in the week of the company, are now things that people want to be part of.
And that's how Art Scene started. That's what we did. We went behind the scenes, and I think that's why it got to be as popular as it is, because that's what people wanted to see. And they didn't want to necessarily see an event. They wanted to see a person.
Yes.
They wanted to see somebody trying to transform their art, trying to transform their career. And, you know, that's just, I think, a trend that just will keep going.
Sure. People want to see that process and the people engaged in it.
Absolutely. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. Today, talking about arts and culture in Central Ohio with Tim Veach of the Columbus Dance Theater, David Bringer of the Ohio State University Music, Media, and Enterprise, and WOSU-TV's own Cindy Galen Art Scene. We are back in 1 minute. Don't go away.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
The numbers are startling. Ohio's maternal death rate has more than doubled over the past two decades. Some suggest the changes in record-keeping account for the increase.
Some of it is certainly maybe due to the identification of cases.
She says overall, women are higher risk these days.
Hear the latest in local and national news with Morning Edition on WOSU 89.7 FM.
Good morning. You're listening to All Sides Weekend with Christopher Purdy here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Sunshine changing to cloudy skies this afternoon with a chance of showers throughout the night. Tonight with an overnight low of 52. Currently it's 61 degrees here in Columbus. Tomorrow, cloudy, showers with a chance of thunderstorms throughout the day and a high around 68. And Sunday, the rain continues, clouds and rain with a high around 65. And now back to All Sides Weekend.
We are back with All Sides Weekend, talking about the arts and culture in Central Ohio with Tim Veach of the Columbus Dance Theater, David Bringner of The Ohio State University, and WOSU-TV's Cindy Gaylord. Give us a call. Let us know what you're excited about, what you're looking for in spending your arts dollar or your time, your impression of arts and culture in Central Ohio, 292-8513. That's a 614 area code. Or send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. We've got three prime movers in cultural affairs in Columbus sitting right here waiting to take your calls, 292-8513. Speaking of all this, it's not even new media anymore, is it? Or social? It's sort of middle-aged social platform. Cindy Gaylord, I was telling you off air that I sent my first text message 6 weeks ago with help, and I'm very proud of myself. I've never tweeted in my life. What am I missing?
Well, I think you're missing the immediacy of seeing an event through somebody else's eyes. And I think that where tweeting is at its best is when you get somebody who can really describe what's going on and the fun and the excitement, where tweeting becomes just another ephemeral kind of message in your day, is when you don't get that fun perspective of somebody saying, here are the details of what I am doing now. Sometimes it's just, you know, I'm at Wendy's getting a cheeseburger. Well, who cares about that?
I get a lot of that, yeah.
You know, when I was directing we were at the Lincoln Theater and we were recording a concert, the Hot 5, Hot 7 by the Columbus Jazz Orchestra. I did a lot of Facebooking that morning because I was so excited about doing, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff, and I was hoping that all my cameras were working and everything. I got a lot of response from that because people were saying, hey, good luck, let's do this. And people I didn't even know on Facebook, but I kind of knew, you know, friends of friends and friends, they were all really happy. Somebody from California I haven't seen in 30 years. So when you get to be a good Twitterer, if that's a word, or somebody who's good at Facebooking, you're giving people content. And I think that's what you and I are good at.
Yeah.
And why you should be tweeting more.
Okay. Well, I've never tweeted at all, so
okay,
I'll
we need to
tweeting.
Get you more on it. And you and I are friends on Facebook, so we need to do that. And I think it's just trying to find the real meaning in what our day-to-day existence is.
Does it make a difference about the quality of content you put out there, David Bringner? That's probably a big part of what you're doing when are you focusing on exactly what people are communicating in addition to how?
Yeah, it really has to be both.
Right.
Part of what makes it interesting, though, and it's what you're talking about, Cindy, is that knowing how actually makes a big difference. There's more than one kind of tweet, and there's the making a peanut butter sandwich kind that who cares? But if you're actually good at it, it becomes compelling. I mean, my initial reaction, and this is a reflection of my age, I think, to Twitter, was that, okay, this is ridiculous. And then you start to see some tweets coming in about breaking news around the world, and you realize, oh, well, this is incredibly powerful. I was completely wrong about this. So the quality of content, I think, is also huge. And so we look at that, but it's also got to do with how you're doing it, how well you're doing it, the circumstances surrounding the way you're doing it. I mean, it's incredibly contextual. And so to get a picture of what works and what doesn't, we try to get a 360-degree picture of what's going on.
We were talking a little bit facetiously, I think, about people who are actually tweeting during events, during performances. But we all know it happens. I mean, have you experienced that, Tim, in your own work?
Actually, I saw a fantastic dance produced at Columbus Dance Theater by choreographer Coco Loop. Did a really interesting work where she was Facebooking as the choreographer while filming the dance as it happened. And she would react to responses on Facebook that were projected on a screen in the theater while the dance is occurring.
The mind reels.
Right, exactly. So it's about this layering effect. And
yeah.
And so the dancers are dancing. She's filming them dancing. She has an open Facebook feed going on that the whole audience can see. And then people in the audience actually could get out their cells and they could text back into the Facebook. I mean, it was so dynamic.
you know, I was sitting there just sort of watching it all spinning around. It was a very interesting concept. And as ever, I think artists are sometimes cutting to the front of things because she's also making a commentary about where's our attention going. Right?
Well, that I wanted to follow up with that a bit. Did it all become about gadgets and less about dance? I mean, I would, you know, if somebody was sitting next to me doing that and I'm wanting to work at the stage, I may have to hit them, just so you know.
Right,
so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think she was investigating all those ideas. You know, where is the focus? Who is the focus? Is the electronic device the focus now? Is the performer, the physical performer, are they merged? Are they not? Are they divorced from each other? I mean, I think there were a lot of issues choreographically for her in doing that. And I thought it was very interesting work.
And it goes to the idea of suspension of disbelief, you know, the being able to lose yourself as an audience member as into what is going on. And if you are always texting or tweeting or receiving that, you know, your attention, of course, is completely taken away. But it's that's what I like art to be, is to take me out of my world.
Right. Yeah.
Get me out of here for a while, please, and take me to a different place. So I wonder, you know, those people that are doing that, are they just not experiencing it as much? Or maybe they're so multitasked, you know, can do that, and they can do two sides of their brain going on.
It could be generational. I don't think I'm wired that way, that I could really appreciate
either.
That a lot. But I'm not saying it's a bad thing, because it seems to be the way it's going. So there's no point in saying it's, you know, a bad thing. But I think I always like to be riveted to the stage or wherever it's going on.
Well, yeah. I think it also suggests that we're not just seeing new creative tools or new delivery methods, but we're verging on new kinds of art. I mean, I think for a new audience, we may be seeing kind of like a major cultural shift. So certainly it's still dance, but it's not only dance. It's that and something more for the participants. And it's cultural. I'm of a generation where if I'm at an event, my attention is on the stage. I don't want to know what the person next to me is thinking.
Right.
But that doesn't mean it's wrong. I agree with you.
Save your peanut butter sandwich. 292-8513 is the number. We have a call from John who wants to talk about tweeting during performances. Hello, John.
Hi. You've all been anticipating my call in a way, because I find myself wishing there was a way of discouraging all that twittering going on during performances. Two of the last three college-level performances I've been to, there was someone next to me, and in one particular, there was some dark atmospherics going on at the end, and this light going on and off next to me and all the fidgeting next to me, I really found distracting from the communal experience.
Did you say anything?
I moved in that case.
Oh, good.
There was some open seats,
good.
And I sort of put blinders on with my hands at first, and then I moved. And on the other hand, I tell you, it was kind of fun in the other instance to see when the bench scene and If I Loved You and Carousel came on, to see the twittering stop, and suddenly the kids sitting there slack-jawed, riveted to the stage. So you can see the power of the performance trumping all that chatter too. But I just wonder if there's any way of discouraging that without scaring young people away.
Well, that's the question.
That's a good question, John. Thanks for your call.
We've started making announcements at performances about enjoying the moment, enjoying the present moment. Saying, you know, put away your device and simply find sanctuary here in this moment that you're going to experience.
I think, though, that a lot of people today are enjoying simultaneous moments. They don't enjoy the moment anymore. I'm not even saying they're wrong, because I'm a waste. don't be preaching at me. But I happen to know that, for example, when we go out and do live remotes and we're there broadcasting live events, some of our technical people are tweeting back and forth with people on the stage, you know, and it breaks, which is amazing in some ways. But I've asked them to don't tell me what they're saying, because I don't want to have anything inform the commentary except that what I see and know about. 292-8513 is the call if you'd like to join our conversation about the arts and culture in Central Ohio. And we're seeming to have a nice chat about so-called new, or I guess middle-aged media instead of news right now. We have a note, an email from Emma, who was at Ballet Met recently. There was the audience could text in their vote for one of three dance options. It was like American Idol, which the dancers would then perform. Tim Beach is giving me a look here. I don't know if he likes that.
No, I do. I think that sounds interesting.
Emma liked the concept. So basically, you are carving out the performance yourself by sort of group consensus 5 minutes before it happens.
Yeah, and I think that there is
a
place, a time, and a utility for all of the social media. I think that, you know, for somebody who wants to be in the moment and have that singular moment, you know, we need to respect that for other people, just like, you know, talking in a movie. I mean, that used to be my biggest pet peeve, and I don't go to movies anymore. I watch things on DVD.
I did a production in December called A to Z, which is where the whole concept was about audience feedback and participation. I made 26 dance phrases, A, B, C, D, et cetera. The audience had scorecards, and they would score the phrase on a scale of 1 to 5, how they liked it. Carpe Diem String Quartet played 3 pieces of music, and they scored the 3 pieces of music. Then at the intermission, people frantically took all the cards, added up the scores, and then I made the dance in the second half using the top 10 phrases and the piece of music.
Oh, I like that a lot. That's amazing.
That was my sort of nod to this concept that we're having a dialogue and you're part of this process. It was exposing the process, which is a very postmodern idea of art making.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was actually successful. I mean, people really seemed to enjoy it. So.
But I did love John's comment when the great moments in Carousel came along, everything stopped. All the little green lights went off and people did. So I think the power of what's going on the stage is still quite potent. We have a call from John again talking about Facebook. John, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes. What you're talking about is reaction to the performance. And if there, the technology evolves to the or the use of it to in a manner that can be separated from the observation of the performance and then displayed subsequently at a later time, you can respect the watching of it for those who just want to watch it, and at the same time use the technology as a way to capture people's responses to it, and then have that display and discussion and as a separate event at which those who wanted just to watch can participate in that follow-on discussion. There might be a way to do that by using the technology in a one crude way would be simply to separate those who want to text during it into a separate part of the audience so that they aren't sitting next to you. They're sitting off in a section by themselves.
Well,
other than another would be...
text-free zone here.
right.
Yeah, and there's really a confluence of two distinct types of activities that needs in one way or another to be separated so that everybody can participate in the one and everyone can participate in the other.
John, thank you for your comment. I think that ties in a little bit what you just said about the piece you were just describing. You used the first half of the evening to involve the audience electronically,
right,
if you will, and then...
And then the second half, it was the process of making the dance, and then the people hopefully weren't having electronic or written responses, and they were just watching the process and then got to watch the dance at the end.
David, for somebody who's coming into one of your courses at OSU and wants to talk about modern platforms and modern arts administration, if you will, what should the student expect? What do you expect of the student? What do you think the result should be when the person finishes your coursework?
Well, coming in, we have very few expectations because people come to the program from all different directions and interests. Primarily, they're interested in music and technology and some aspect of business. But as I said, it really, since music is threaded through most of the arts, there are a lot of ways to come in. Basically, what I expect them to be able to do is begin to look both broadly and critically to what's going on. For example, what we're just talking about, I think we're deep into a trend where we're seeing the difference between audience and artist is beginning to break down in the minds of a lot of people. I think everybody wants to be participating as much of the time as they possibly can. So you get these collisions in performance space.
That's interesting.
From people who want to be purely experiencing the performance, and other people are saying, I'm here, I'm in this, being in the moment actually means participating in the moment. So I expect students to be able to listen to me rant about this stuff and then join in the discussion and say, okay, what are some other examples of this? And therefore, what does that mean? And one of the things that you would hope the students would be able to speculate about is, well, if you had a dance company, maybe you could have a participatory construction of a piece. And we come up with ideas like that. If they're ones that people have already thought of, I still think it's okay because the process is working, but the goal is, the outcome is, I want the students to come out of it and have all of these great ideas. Do these startups come to organizations? I mean, how great would it be to have somebody come to an organization as a new employee and say, well, because of this, this, and this, why don't we do this kind of programming? And you'd be able to go, that might actually work. I mean, that's my goal, is to look at process and then apply it.
You're almost creating other art forms, which I think is great. It sounds like a little bit. You're almost creating other art forms we hadn't, other combinations we hadn't thought of before. What do each of you think the audience is going to look like or be like in 5 years? Cindy.
Oh, come to me, will you? I am just absolutely riveted by what you're saying.
Yeah, I am too.
Because I think you're absolutely right. It's new art forms, and as we're dealing with this discussion, what Tim is doing, you know, creating this dance in the second half is just amazing to me. And I'm thinking that we are seeing the evolution of performance art, where the audience is part of it. And what I'm hoping is that, you know, the audience is no longer all ages, no longer just sitting back and taking it in. And maybe we are the dinosaurs, Christopher, you know, sitting back and just being in the moment. Maybe we maybe we should be sparked to find that creative space, which instead of a suspension of disbelief, we are actually carried on through in this artistic moment and we have something to say about it. That is exciting. That I would deal with sitting next to a whole bunch of texters if I get to participate. Wouldn't that be exciting if we all did that? You know, that all of these performances are like that now.
Tim, what do you think the audience is going to look like in 5 years?
Hopefully young, hopefully hungry to see art. And I think art making has to be very keen about reacting to that audience. I mean, the work we just did, this hands project I just did, had a visual art element, live music, dance, multimedia, a lot of layering components. I think that the eye of the contemporary viewer is about layers. I think that there's a lot of layering that goes on in current media and what people are saturated with visually. For dance, it's a really interesting and compelling time because we're the audience, the eye of the viewer is very fast now. The eye of the viewer wants things that they see quickly and rapidly and make deep impact. And so to get in making the most recent work, we encased the dance three quarters of the way around with visual elements that then sort of washed over the dance throughout.
We've got to take a break. We have some people on hold. I thank you, and I apologize if you're holding, but we will get to you as soon as we can. 292-8513 is the number to call. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
I dreamed about this game, fat man. I dreamed about this game every night on the road. Five ball.
That's Paul Newman in The Hustler. On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to an interview with Dee Dee Allen, who edited The Hustler, Reds, Bonnie and Clyde, and many other films. She died Saturday at the age of 86. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Game.
Fresh Air is coming up in just about 20 minutes here on WOSU 820 NPR News. WOSU's News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson moderates Columbus on the Record. The program features well-respected journalists and veteran political observers offering insight and analysis of the top news stories of the week. Watch Columbus on the Record tonight at 9:30 on WOSU TV. Sunshine changing to cloudy skies this afternoon with a chance of showers, a high around 67. Currently, it's just about 61 degrees. Tonight, clouds with a chance of showers throughout the evening, a low of 52. Tomorrow, cloudy with a more chance of rain and a chance of thunderstorms as well throughout the day with a high of 68. And Sunday, the rain continues, clouds and rain with a high around 65, also a chance of gusty winds that day as well. You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News, and now back to All Sides Weekend with Christopher Purdy.
Thank you, Emma Fett. I'm back with Tim Veach, the artistic director and founder of the Columbus Dance Theater. David Bringer, you're at the School of Music, is that right?
That's correct.
At the Ohio State University, Music, Media, and Enterprise, and WOSU-TV, Cindy Gaylor, the producer, founder, mother, and diva of Art Zine here on WOSU-TV. Carrie has been holding for a while, and I'm sorry about that. I wanted to get her on about, she had a comment on audience etiquette. Carrie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
You know, there are some art forms that lend themselves very much to Twittering and so on and so forth. There are others. I mean, do you really want to sit next to someone who is sending text messages while you're watching Death of a Salesman? I don't think so. I think we have to be very careful not to pander to social media in the search for audience. I say that seriously. There is no one so important that they can't not tweet for about 2 hours. They get the intermission anyway. But it's the respect to the performer. If something is designed to be interactive, by all means. I mean, the dance thing sounds really fabulous, but not everything is. And I think we need to educate our audiences. We need to educate our kids. We don't take them to enough things where they learn what is appropriate in a given situation. So respect for the performer, I think, is crucial here,
Carrie,
and what the performer is trying to do.
Thank you so much for your call, Carrie. Thank you for that. Any comments on that? Are we talking about disrespecting performers if we involve the social media during a performance?
Well, I think she has a great point that it's just being appropriate with what you're doing. You know, if you're with Tim and doing something that's designed for that, that's certainly a great idea. If you're at CATCO, you know, watching the Pillow Man, I don't necessarily want to be, you know, tweeting during something like that because it's so intense. So I think that, you know, use your common sense.
I want to talk a bit about performances coming up, and Tim Veach has one coming up, has a new production, the Women's Dance Project, which I believe is a collaboration with the Carpe Diem String Quartet.
Yes, it is.
Is that right?
That's
now,
right.
One point is your company has made a point of collaborating all over the city. You've been with Opera Columbus. You've done regular seasons with Carpe Diem. You've been on WOSU-TV a number of times.
Yes.
Tell me about the Women's Dance Project.
Women's Dance Project is sort of an outgrowth of our annual concert, New Dance Project. We always do a concert in the late spring that features all new work. We're very interested in new dance. And this project, I was thinking about gender and about whether it makes a difference when you're making art. I would argue it does. But I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting if we had an evening of all female choreographers to see almost like an experiment laboratory what comes out of that context. And so we have incredible, amazing choreographers working on this project. Susan Van Pelt, who's the chair of the dance department at Ohio State, Susan Hadley, professor of dance at Ohio State, Christina Isabel, who's the director of Christina Isabel Dance, Donna Schoenherr, choreographer from London, actually came last summer and set a work on the company, Shelby Bakies, who's done work at Columbus Dance Theater, and oh dear, there's one more. Oh, flying out of my mind, but I will get back to them. And it's just going to be a fantastic, fantastic evening of new dance and new opportunities to see dance from a female point of view.
Is Carpe Diem, which is a string quartet with Charles Weatherby, who is the concertmaster of the Columbus Symphony, and they're having quite a good career on their own, separately from the symphony. Are they making new music for this? How is the music collaboration portion done? What do you do with that?
Well, it's interesting. Different projects are different things. And the other choreographer, by the way, is Susan Mann. And probably the reason she went out of my head
Susan.
Is she's here today setting the work.
Okay.
So it's the one that's most familiar is the one that flies away. She's fantastic from Towson University out in Baltimore. The relationship with Carpe Diem has been an incredible one. We work – initially it began more like, oh, we're doing this dance and it's set to the Shostakovich String Quartet number 8 and will you please play it? And kind of more traditional approach. That has evolved quite a bit. The most recent concert had original score written by Karin Fujiwara, who's in the quartet.
But, yeah.
Charles Weatherby played 6 violin caprices on stage with dancers dancing with him.
Oh.
And him dancing a bit while playing. I mean, it was something to see. So we have been working for a number of years on this relationship of how do we really make this a dynamic music and dance collaboration architecturally in the space. I try not to sort of separate them to the corner. I'm doing things where I place them in as part of the dance, in terms of the space around, have them move. They're very athletic movers, all of them. They're very fit musicians, and they can do quite a bit. I mean, next year we're planning a whole thing where they'll be in different quadrants of the space. So it's a dynamic relationship, and it has really changed my work as a choreographer. I mean, it's really done huge things for me in terms of the kind of work that interests me.
The Columbus Dance Theater's Women's Dance Project, a collaboration with the Carpe Diem String Quartet, is May 14th and 15th. That's the Fisher Theater. That's the name of your theater downtown.
Correct.
What's your website?
www.coldancetheater with an re.org.
More information there. 292-8513, if you'd like to join the conversation about the arts and culture in Central Ohio, give us your impressions of what's going on, maybe things you would like to see or things that you have enjoyed or looking forward to. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. One more time, 614-292-8513. David Bringer, you've been on campus for just over 3 years, is that right?
That's right.
So as somebody, as a relative newcomer to Central Ohio, you came here from San Antonio, I understand, from Texas, which
yes.
has long had a vibrant art scene down there. What are you finding here in our community? What would you like to see happen?
What struck me when I first arrived here is that Columbus is a little more parochial than San Antonio. It's a little smaller. And I think to a certain extent that's real. Some of it's just apparent, but I think some of it's real. And I think the frustration for presenters may be when you're trying to be genuinely progressive or experimental, you may find audiences – you may or may not find audiences lag behind. Over a course of a year or two, I've realized I think there's a lot of unwarranted negativity about the art scene in Columbus because there's a lot going on here. And I think there's a defensiveness or even an apologetic quality when you talk to Columbus natives about Columbus culturally. And I just think, well, you know, that for a city this size, there's an awful lot going on. And there's a lot of high-quality art going on. So what I'd kind of like to see is people lighten up a little bit and just say, you know, the Columbus rocks. Because I think it does.
Excellent point. You know, one thing that I always get when we have these programs and why I go out is people say, I didn't know, I didn't know, I didn't know. And I don't get that because, we are in the age of social media and we are on, some of us do communication for a living. And there is TV and there's a lot of coverage of a lot of events going on. So I'm not quite sure what to do with that. Do we have to do a better job, Cindy Gaylord? Is there too much going on?
You know, I just wonder where people are getting their information because you tend to be habitual when you, let's say, like dance or you like the orchestra or you like the opera or you like whatever. So you will stay with one type of arts organization. And I think that it's just getting out of that habit. I preach this all the time. Go to columbusarts.com, yes. Find out what's going on. That is a really great website.
One-stop shopping.
One-stop shopping. And then, you know, experiment. Go out to CDT and see what they have. You have to take a risk. Oh, my God. And you actually have to go out and just say, I'm going to go see dance today. And I think that's it. I think we're habitual. We do tend to watch a lot more movies than we do tend to go downtown and actually participate and be, you know, in the audience
it's
for the arts.
It's hard to get off that couch.
It's
hard for me.
And here's my new thing is that arts equals fitness. If you get off your couch and you go down, that will count for exercise. And I promise you will burn at least another 5,000 calories. So you need to go down and participate in some sort of arts.
And you'll transcend so you don't need that cheeseburger when you get
absolutely.
Out of there. You don't.
Absolutely.
Instead, you're going to go subscribe to their next performances.
Absolutely. You know, because you can eat salads and they're cheap and, you know.
Keep that high going. 292-8513. We have a call from Brigitte who wants to talk about types of future audiences. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Thanks
go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Before I get to my question, I was just thinking that when I'm at church, the singing and the performances are very intertwined almost. I mean, you're moving, and they actually want you to raise your hand with the singers and different things like that. I just had that thought.
It's a great thought. Yeah, yeah, that's wonderful.
So are you going to an Episcopal church?
No.
I don't think so, right?
No, but if I did, I've been to, like, I guess, kind of slow churches, and I'm so in that mode that I can't help. If it sounds good, I'll raise my hand or I'll do something like that. So I don't down them. You know, maybe they might not lose 1,000 calories like at my church.
I'm coming
to your church. We're all coming to your church. Great.
But my comment was, you guys were talking about the audiences and how audiences might change. And I know this might sound terrible, but when we look at our even our political realm, I can remember when Obama addressed the House of Representatives, there were Congress people, you know, they were texting, BlackBerrying, and using their Twitter.
Yeah.
Maybe there might in the future be a section for people that want to do something like that.
We have a Twitter-free zone, and we'll have a Twitter welcome area of seating as well. So
you can
shine your little green lights on each other and to your heart's content.
Now, unfortunately, you know, I'm pretty sure that, you know, they're like, I pay my money, I want to sit closer.
Yeah.
It is irritating to me, but I always think, you know, I never know what they're tweeting about. Maybe it was an emergency or something like that. So I kind of give them the benefit of the doubt, but it does irritate me a lot.
You're very kind. I don't think it's an emergency.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your call. Thank you for that. You know, I don't want to make this program all of our conversation about electronics and forget about the actual performances and the kind of the reason that we're here, that some of us get up in the morning, is because we get very excited about what we see and hear, and we might react to other people a little bit later. And I'm wondering how dated that makes me, or am I still a good candidate to be in your audience, Tim?
You're a great candidate for our audience. I think that good art draws you in.
Right.
And if it's compelling, if it's interesting, you'll put your tweet down. And that's just the truth. So I think that distraction will disappear if the art is focused and draws the viewer in. That's my I have to live by that. I have to believe that for what I do. And finding vehicles for people to express, like the concert I talked about, you know, a more interactive way, I think is terrific. And then finding opportunities for them to be interested and compelled by the single object in front of them is the essence of good art making. So hopefully that will survive.
But I'm an old snob, because I think if you're going to sit there and tweet and communicate, I really hope that critical thinking hasn't gone, you know, down the pike, that people are they're saying something, frankly, worthwhile that contributes to the dialogue of the art form.
Well, I think that's that's by no means guaranteed, but I think it's a real possibility for the younger generation. And I think if I'm going to look at what audiences are going to be in 5 to 10 years, I think we're going to see, if we want younger audiences, as Tim said, we have to have younger audiences, we're going to go through a period of increasing polarization between parts of the audience. And I think creating different zones, although I understand the appeal, it's probably a mistake, because that's not what we really want. I think what artists are going to have to do, and presenters, is put the art out there, get people through the door by saying, if you want to tweet, you can tweet, and then be confident that moment, that bench scene moment, for example, in any art can transcend the tweeting, and there's 3 minutes of tweet-free silence, and then just a wow. That would be a good outcome.
I think that will. I think you're right about that.
I mean, I remember my son, when he was 4 years old, sat through a dress rehearsal of the Trojan Women that I choreographed and my wife directed at Otterbein College. This is a long time ago. He's now 18. He begged us to see it because he knew we were working on this project, and we kept saying, no, 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 not really appropriate for you, et cetera. And then I finally said, well, you can watch the rehearsal, but you have to promise not to get up and get, you know, edgy and wander away. And he sat there, arms in his lap. The thing ended, and he looked and he said, I liked the play. So I think if it's good material, people will be interested. regardless of their age.
I think that I have often been at performances here and elsewhere where you get the silence from the audience, where something happens. And I think the whole reason to have the arts is to build community. That's just me, you know. And you don't – and, you know, texting and things are another way of expanding that community. Yeah. But and for that reason, it's very important to be up on that. But I think also you really want to go for the silence. And I've been in the midst of 2,000 people where that happens, that everybody stops whatever they're doing and everybody is together for 4 or 5 seconds. It seems like a long time. It's maybe 4 or 5 seconds, but you are absolutely all on the same wavelength. And I think all of us has probably had that experience a few times.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we have to remember that performance is kind of a different beast.
Yes.
And maybe we should think of our intermissions in a different way. Instead of maybe one big intermission in the middle, maybe we have two, and one's a tweet intermission. I'm not really sure. You know, when the museum actually put together their cell phone tours, I thought that was amazing.
It's great, yeah.
And it's wonderful. And, you know, I was in St. Louis over the weekend. It's still, they have cell phone tours there, which is great information you really can't get anywhere else unless you want to read a book as you're going through, you know, the museum. And I think it's fantastic that it married so perfectly with the needs of the patrons. And I think with performance, that's just what we have to do as arts organizers and artisans, you know, just to marry that. And like you said, you know, just find those moments where it's art is such a great equalizer that nobody wants to do
right.
anything but just be there in that moment together.
And the art does that for you.
And
really.
The art does
that's
that for
how,
you.
That's why we keep going back and forth again.
Absolutely.
292-8513. We have 3 minutes. If you want to call in, if you can be succinct, we'll be happy to take your call at 292-8513. David, I know that you have a background as a musician and a performer. What brought you to where you are today?
Trying to make a living.
Well, that's good, too.
As a performer.
Yes.
And you take a look at how things work and how things don't work, and I began to try to run my own little business, and then I went to some school and I did some other things, and I found myself realizing, well, they're not – as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, there are a lot of things they don't teach you that they should teach you, and so it's the school of hard knocks is what brought me to where I am.
Now, you mentioned Tim, your 18-year-old son, who I know is dancing.
Yeah, he is. He is in New York City dancing. Well, he was trained in our school and apprenticed with us. And then his senior year, he had an opportunity. He got a full scholarship to the School of American Ballet in New York. And so he's, yeah.
Wow.
Very exciting. So he's there studying at Lincoln Center and lives in an apartment across the street from Lincoln Center. He's having kind of a great year.
I'm going to go bunking with him. That sounds fantastic. Okay, we have one call from Janet to talk about audience participation. We only have a minute, Janet, so go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I just love events when the – like Garrison Keillor does it, Harvey Felder, who's a performer, does it, where he actually at some point in the performance, beginning, the middle, the end, he has the people sing, or in some cases I've been at events where you're asked to move. And I do think there – is a connection to the audience that lingers beyond the other powerful moments you might have in an event. And I would like to see that done a lot more, not just in professional performances, but also in amateur ones, so that we can return to being all of us artists in our daily lives.
Janet, thank you so much for that call. I think that goes back to community, to building
mm-hmm.
community.
Mm-hmm.
You have each 10 seconds for last words if you'd like them. Cindy Galen, watch Art Scene.
Well, watch Art Scene and go to CDT Performances.
Okay, David okay. Bringer.
Let's use arts administration to bring artists and audiences and communities together.
Tim Veach, give the website again.
Oh, www.coldancetheaterwithanre.org.
May 14th and 15th, the Women's Dance Project
yes.
with the Carpe Diem String Quartet.
Yes.
Where is your theater?
At the corner of Main and Interstate 71 downtown, 592 East Main.
And parking is wonderful,
it
by
is,
the way.
It is, yes. Right
parking
next door.
Is great.
Easy parking.
Right off street, right next door. You don't
right.
have to park on 71.
No.
My thanks to Tim Veach, who is the founder and artistic director of the Columbus Dance Theater, to David Bringer of the School of Music at The Ohio State University, who is doing great work reinventing the profession of arts administration with his program Music, Media, and Enterprise, and our own Cindy Gaylord from WOSU-TV's Art Scene, who knows everything there is to know about everything in the entire world. Thank you, Cindy Gaylord. Thank you also to the ever-radiant Emma Fett, who is our producer for this hour. Thank you for your good help, and to Brady O'Callaghan with the phones. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, and this is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at wosu.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.